Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Stanfeld, and each week on this program, I present people I feel are really at the cutting edge of a spiritual technology that's emerging in this country around the world. This week, I have a very interesting guest who's going to talk about a whole range of things, starting with intrauterine fetal development and the influences that impact us from point zero on, from our conception on. So tonight's guest is Jeff Schofield. Jeff, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
You're also going to be presenting this coming week at the Psychohistory Conference in New York. Why don't you give it, I know you're a chiropractor and I know you've done some very interesting developments. Why don't you just give the listeners a little overview of really, well, let's go into what your psychohistory presentation is about, because I think that's the most interesting. So go ahead.
Well, thank you. The name of my presentation is Origin of Child Abuse, Maternal Orgasm in Pregnancy. So basically, if you Google sex during pregnancy, 95% or more of the websites say it's safe for the fetus. But if you go to PubMed and do a search for maternal orgasm in pregnancy, there are no clinical studies which monitor the real-time fetal response to maternal orgasm.
So you're saying because of the contractions that happen during orgasm, the fetus is very much impacted in those, in that?
Yes. Medical scientists, the medical arena, have acknowledged for many, many years that the contractions of labor cut off the blood supply during the contraction, and if it wasn't for the spacing of contractions, the fetus would suffocate. So my contention is if a contraction will cut off the blood supply during delivery, what does it do during the contractions which follow maternal orgasm?
So let's say your mother is having an orgasm for some reason. What are the effects on that child once the child is born that's so harmful?
Well, the there are 52 generations of cellular division which occur from conception to an 18-year-old. 40 of those occur in the womb. And each one of those generations of cellular division require oxygen for proper development of the cells, and the cells as they go from one generation to the next. And any time there is a stoppage, even if it's only for 15 minutes to 20 minutes, which is what I would guess the average time the uterus stays contracted after an orgasm, the fetus survives. Obviously, we've been surviving for centuries. But when we have this repeated experience, what happens is the blood supply is cut off, but we have all the pleasure from the mom and dad simultaneously imposed. So we have what I call the pain-pleasure complex.
Uh-huh.
Now, in our society, painkillers are big business. The pharmaceutical industry is more than willing to support us in our resistance to our pain. But actually, pain is just like an emotion. When you learn how to love the pain, pain is just like a paper tiger and it melts away.
So the impact you're saying on these maternal orgasms is that we develop this pleasure-pain reflex almost in our most earliest influence.
Right. The it's in every love song that's ever been written. You know, the heartache, the pain that comes along simultaneously with the pleasure. So we're basically reenacting in what we call love in our society, and with the incredible diversity that's awakening from inside, from these fetal memories, I feel this is why the family structure is breaking down, and why there's an awakening to the time when there was three people involved, mom, dad, and the baby.
Uh-huh.
But up to this point in time, well, a lot of research is going into pre- and perinatal psychology, a field called telegeny, which studies the communications organically or biochemically between the mom and the baby, all kinds of hormones that communicate back and forth as they're building this, as the baby and the mom are working together to build this body.
Wow. But I'm just curious, have there been studies that have been done on children where they know the mother hasn't had orgasms versus children where it's known and they have the track the psychological difference between these two?
No, the parity of research in this arena is screaming for attention. If
it should be pretty easy.
I did go online. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying it should be pretty easy to do. I mean, in the open society we have, we could just ask women, you know, I know women I know I can ask who have children and say, hey, did you have sex while you were pregnant? And then we could study the children. But, no, go ahead. You go ahead.
When I go on PubMed and Google sex during pregnancy, back in the 1980s, I found a few studies where they actually had the women monitored with an ultrasound and with the fetal heart rate during coitus. And the conclusion of the study is that the reaction of the fetus would be considered ominous. But the studies were cut off. It's like it didn't fit with our Hollywood, you know, anything goes type of consciousness.
Huh.
And so the studies got shut down. And we started working with animals and because the researchers were starting to tap into this, and so they were forced because of moral and ethical issues to go to looking at animals and animal response. So they use monkeys and sheep, and they monitor what happens when you constrict the amount of blood flow going through the placenta. Incredible amounts of research done here. The irony of it is none of the animals which they're studying actually engage in sex after conception. Human beings, of all God's creations, human beings are the only ones who engage in sex after conception.
Huh. How often would you say in the population does that actually happen? Of course, you know, our sexual understanding is changing, but is it 50% of people after pregnancy have sex, or...
From what I've seen as I've searched and tried to get in touch with the current concepts, most of the websites say as long as there's no, you know, pre-existing conditions, it's generally safe for the fetus for the parents to engage in sex, and they actually encourage it.
There's a woman I know who is a doula midwife who says that it is good for the mother. She actually doesn't talk about the child, but be interesting to get her on the line. Are you the only one? Have you originated this research, or is this based on other scientific understandings?
As far as I know, myself and my wife are the only two that I know of who are actually experiencing being able to remember our own uterine experience. And most people listening probably have heard of rebirthing, which is very popular in mm-hmm. Europe. Princess Diana loved to do rebirthing.
I have to just say, go ahead. Go ahead.
Leonard Orr is considered the father of rebirthing.
Uh-huh.
And he had a technique where he would use a snorkel and a nose plug and have a facilitator with a person in a warm, hot tub and basically have them stay still and just breathe. And it helps people heal birth traumas.
Yeah.
And so when I did that work when I first heard about it, and I loved what I experienced, but as I was as a chiropractor background, I have extensive training in embryology, and I knew that the fetus drank water through its nose. And then I also have had training where pain is considered the capstone to memory in a work developed by John Ray, Body Electronics. Mm-hmm. And so I asked myself the question, well, why do we need the nose plug if we're actually going to go back and be like we were in the womb? We didn't have a nose plug. Of course, I wasn't willing to let go of the snorkel because I still needed to breathe. But I took the nose plug off while I'm curled up in the bathtub, and I gently drew water across my nasal membrane. Uh-huh. Now, because the nasal memories go the deepest of any into our psyche, what happened, and this was back in 1994 when I first came across...
Wait, that's also a very interesting... Let me just hold that there for a second. Nasal memory is the deepest. I just have never heard that. That is really fascinating. I just want to, like, remember that. That's pretty amazing. So go ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Tell yeah, me. I mean, as far as smells, if you smell something, you can have like a memory go back very deep in your psyche of when you had that smell before, like roses or different perfumes you can remember. I even think the fetus remembers the perfumes or the odors that the mom had because it gets in the blood. Uh-huh. And the research that documents that the fetus actually likes the food the mother likes because of this communication that goes on between the mom and the baby.
And, of course, there's the subconscious smells as well, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, stuff that you do.
The amount of communication between the mom and the baby is so amazing. And it's just now starting to come to light. There's so much research that is showing that the fetus is fully aware of everything the parents think, feel, and say during the entire pregnancy, even prior to conception.
Wait. Prior to conception, being on a spirit soul level,
the energies, the thoughtward and emotional patterns of the parents are imposed on the sperm for the dad and on the egg for the mom.
At the moment of conception,
prior to. It's like, and the emotions which exist between the parents as they're trying to decide to have a child. I mean, the child knows whether it's wanted or not.
But so many children are born into parents that don't want it.
And the child feels every one of these things when it's recorded. And then we wonder why people come out and they're not able to stay in loving relationships because, you know, the original script they got from the parents was not of that nature.
Huh. Very interesting. No, I think it's fascinating. So, okay, so I was going to say that I do remember my fetal memory. I think I do remember being invaded by my father when I was in the womb. It came back to me after a rebirth session, and it was very clear. I mean, of course, there's no way to prove it, but I really felt that was true. So I think you're onto something. I think you're really onto something.
There's so much research and correlation that could be done if we can get over the guilt. Because what I'm saying is that if sex during pregnancy is imposing a pain-pleasure complex, that is the roots of child abuse. This would make the parents the people that set the stage for child abuse. That would make parents the sexual predator.
Wait, let's back up. I just want to understand the concept of why do you call that child abuse? Why be so severe? Yeah.
Okay. Well, child abuse has many forms that we obviously see manifesting. But what I'm saying is let's go back and look at what actually happens during the contraction of the uterus after an orgasm. And what happens is the CO2 builds up, the metabolic waste builds up, the blood cannot flow either in or out of the cord for 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, however long the contraction lasts. And this makes the fetus angry. It actually hurts. The fetus has to literally kill or destroy a part of itself in order to survive. Now, in a drowning victim, there's a survival mechanism in place where as the person is going unconscious under the water, the blood is shunted to the core organs. So the skin, which is the first thing that we see and that we associate with aging, has the blood supply cut off. So even the underlying mechanisms of aging and death are tied to these earlier, where we had to literally kill a part of ourselves to survive. And it's like the originations of survival consciousness that we see, you know, so prevalent. The origins of so many of the ills of society, I think, if we were honest and we could let the fetus tell us, we're going to find that it's a much deeper and darker issue than we've been willing to face as a society.
Well, let's look at this on this show. I think that's the importance of this show. I'm willing to look at all opinions. I've done lots of shows on sexuality, and you're saying basically to abstain from sex during pregnancy, right?
Yes. In fact, I've recently come across some very interesting a book called the OASPI Bible. It was printed in 1882. And it was given to a dentist, channeled, and he was told to sit down at a typewriter with lots of paper and we'll run your fingers for you. And he printed the entire manuscript without ever reading it, and then he had it printed. But it's basically a record that goes back 24,000 years, and it's divided up into 3,000-year cycles. And each cycle had a similar set of Ten Commandments like Moses had given to him. And all of the major religions that we see in all the other different countries, the thing that's unique about the Ten Commandments to the other cycles is they have a specific commandment in there not to have sex during pregnancy. What I feel has happened is this commandment was removed from the King James Version of the Bible at the burning of the Alexandria Library in 390.
Wait. The King James Version of the Bible wasn't written until like the 1600s.
Yes. But the records that I'm referring to, okay, it's like, you're right, as far as the King James Version was printed.
But you're saying the original Bible itself.
It's called the Alexandria Library was burned in the year 390.
Right, and so that's where the original Old
Bible.
Testament, which Bible?
Not the New Testament? The Old Testament, but these records about Zarathustra, who says in here that the Buddhist and Christian religions are made up chiefly from the history and miracles of Zarathustra. It's an amazing Bible, but when I came across this work, and within 15 minutes, or about half an hour of reading this book, I was directed to a specific passage of scripture on page 372, and it's called the First Book of God, chapter 2. And I'm just going to read it because this just blew me away when I read it.
Okay.
It says, "And thou shalt respect the times of the woman, and when she is bearing unto thee, thou shalt not lie with her, nor give her heavy labor, nor angry words, nor fret her, but be obedient to her, doing whatsoever she asketh thee to do, for it is her time, and she is thy queen, teaching this to thy young men and to thy young women and to their heirs that come after them forever. For the young are begotten of me, and I will have them shapely and strong and brave." Similar commandments like this are found in each of the 3,000-year cycles. So I'll spell the name of this Bible for those listening. If you want to get a copy, it's available online. You can read this stuff online. It's spelled OAHSPE. I was so amazed when I've been doing this research and had this feeling that sex during pregnancy was wrong for 15 years now. And all of a sudden, within the last month, I find it's been suppressed knowledge in. And the thing that's interesting is the people who set our moral and ethical standards are our religious people, where they say, it's okay. You know, the preacher will go home and poke his wife when she's pregnant on Sunday afternoon. You know, they're the ones that say it's okay. So we have to.
Well, I think people are getting away from that because, you know, most people that I know don't give any attention to their religious leaders. They're developing their own form of spirituality. And
well,
you're there, New York.
I live in the heartland of America, and we're really. I live in Illinois. This is the conservativeness. I realize in New York it's very open, as well as you know in California different ways. But I'm stuck in the middle here.
Right. But I'm saying even in the spirit. I mean, I'm agreeing with you because even in the spiritual, like New Age circles, they're saying, "Oh, it's okay to have sex, you know, during pregnancy." I mean, no one, I think, realizes what you've discovered.
Right. The conclusion I've come to after trying to share what I've been doing for the last 15 years is that no one's going to believe me. The only thing that will really convince the scientific community as well as the populace in general is the concept we have to see to believe it. And we've been blessed with the technology. We have 4D ultrasound. We can see intimate facial expressions. We can monitor the heart rate. We can monitor the...
Wait, do you have an ultrasound of a fetus while the mother's having an orgasm? Do you actually have an ultrasound of that?
There has been studies done, but they were back in the 80s, and I have the links and whatnot. If people want to check out these links, I'll give the name of my blog. And
Please.
It's www.myotherhalf.blog.com. So it's very, you know, like my other half refers to our cord and placental. It was literally our other half. And when we're born, that one-third of our original DNA material is cut off. And, all of whatever the alignment of the stars were at the time our cord was cut, it's where a lot of these things around, you know, the stars and all that stuff comes from. But if we can go back into the time and the memory of when we were whole, I think we'll find that the keys to oneness on this planet actually lie in the mind of the fetus. And I know that you interviewed J.J. Hertog.
I know J.J. Hertog.
And there's a plate in the Yahweh, the 64 Keys of Enoch, which has a picture of a sphinx. And inside of it are naked men and women walking, and then spiraled down below, there's a fetus. And out of the, it's like, you know, you see the cartoons where they have the idea of the fetus going up to the cartoon character. But it's, anyway, if people want to, have the 64 Keys of Enoch and they want to go to plate number 5, it's on page 60, just after page 68 in the 64 Keys of Enoch, they'll get a feeling that the answers to oneness on this planet lie in the subconscious mind of the fetus, and I feel like that's what I've been tapping into within myself. And it's the thing that's fascinated me about my work is that ever since my belly button pulsed the first time I breathed water up my nose, it's pulsed every time I've done it.
Let's go into that because I mean I think this is the other part of your incredible discovery is not only did you discover that, yes, orgasms impact fetal memory with pleasure-pain principles, but you discovered a way to reverse it. So let's go into that, and then you'll get into how your navel pulse. So tell us how you discovered this undoing of the trauma.
Okay, I'd be happy to. I was living on a horse farm in Versailles, Missouri, the first time I tried this snorkeling technique. There was a deep bathtub in the basement, and I got a snorkel and a nose plug, and I curled up in the fetal position in the warm water and started breathing. Nothing else, just breathing through my snorkel. And I got the idea to remove the nose plug and gently draw water one nasal at a time across my nasal membrane. And what happened, you know,
when you say draw, do you mean inhale through the nose the water? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, you use one finger to close off one nostril and gently draw water up and around, and there's swallowing reflexes which engage so that it doesn't go in the lung.
Okay.
So I was afraid I would drown the first time I tried it, but the swallowing reflexes were there, and it made it possible to stay in a fetal position under the water.
Oh, you have to stay in a fetal position. Is that key, staying in the fetal position?
Oh, it's absolutely vital to get in touch with these memories.
And I see. So let me just take this slow because I want to actually do this in my bathtub after this conversation. So I go into the fetal. I fill up my bathtub. I go into the fetal position. Close one nostril. Inhale through the nostril.
Right.
Get the water in, and then I swallow it. It doesn't go into the lungs, right?
Right. And then you do the other nostril. And basically, once you have elicited, and it will be painful. Generally, it'll be burning and different kinds of sensations, like we get when we go swimming and get water up our nose. But behind that pain is the entire record of our in-utero experience. And my navel started to pulse the first time I tried this.
Now, what does that mean, your navel decided to pulse?
My navel...
I know what the sensation, but what is that? What does that refer to, that the fact that that happened?
Okay, in the womb, there was a pulsing of the blood. You can see this on an ultrasound. There was a literal bolus of blood that pulsed along the umbilical cord. So I perceived it to be just literally the record of that pulse.
Huh. So it takes you right back, you're saying, to the fetal memory of that pulse, but how does it connect with the trauma of the orgasm?
Now, when I first started doing this technique, I had not connected the dots with the orgasm at all.
Oh,
I was just doing rebirthing, and you know, like and or his work was basically to heal birth traumas, but he used the nose plug, so he wasn't eliciting the nasal pain.
Uh-huh.
Now, I've done this work for 15 years, and just recently I got into doing urine therapy, and of course we drank the amniotic fluid in the womb, and the amniotic fluid is primarily composed of the urine that we urinate, and then we drink it back in. And the research has shown that the development of our gut is dependent upon this urine for our gut to normally develop. So it's not just learning how to swallow, it's actually nourishing to the gut.
Wait, so let me get that. So you're saying it's even more powerful, instead of taking water in through the nose, you're taking your own urine through your nose.
Correct. You can buy one of those bulb syringes and just fill it full of urine, and then while you're curled up in the bathtub with your snorkel, close off one nostril with your finger. You got this. It's tricky, but if you get into there and take your time, it'll come to you. And just squeeze the, and then you also suck at the same time and squeeze the bulb to where the urine goes up into your nasal passage and swallow the urine rather than water, which is full of chlorine and all kinds of stuff.
Why do you need the snorkel? What does the snorkel do?
So you can stay under the water and keep breathing. Because this is
So
you stay in the fetal position.
So how long would you stay under the water for?
Oh, as long as I want to. I mean, I call it my happy place. And every time I would go back, like I'd have a hard day at work, I'd come home, I'd get, you know, a lot of people have to get in hot water, right?
Yeah.
Just take another step. Get your snorkel and try this. You'll be amazed at how much happier you even get when you can relieve the tension and the pain that you didn't realize was going on 24/7 from the fetal memories that are continuously active in our lives. Everything we've ever experienced is from conception to age 3 or 4, which we've forgotten. It's still in the subconscious running our show. So the more we can remember, the more we're in control of our life.
Uh-huh. So you did that the first time and your navel area started to pulse.
Yes. Now, I want to set the stage a little bit because I feel like I've been directed by, you know, I was raised in a very spiritual environment.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, I had some personal challenge where I prayed for guidance. Uh-huh. And I feel like I was, you know, guided into this. But prior to, you see, I'm a chiropractor, and when I was in practice, my parents both had cancer. Dad had liver cancer, mom had colon cancer. And I had a man call me on the phone because I had, my oldest daughter had cerebral palsy, and that challenge is what actually pushed me over the edge to look for answers in corners that most people would never look.
So
this guy told me about the effect of metal in the teeth on the meridians, because the Chinese meridians flow through each tooth, and this is one of the biggest cover-ups that's going on in this country with the medical the dental profession, is that it's not just the mercury that's damaging, it blocks the energy flow of the meridians through each tooth.
When
my parents had their teeth pulled, full extraction, there's so much to what I'm saying, but what I'm trying to say is before I started breathing water out my nose, I had my meridians cleared because I chose to have my teeth extracted when I saw my parents both get over terminal cancer. And that
was all your teeth extracted?
Yes. That was probably the most difficult decision I ever made. But
you had let me just take that in. You're saying you had all, not just the ones that had cavities and fillings, you had all your teeth extracted?
Yes.
For
your listeners, if they would like to go and Reinhold Voll, it's V-O-L-L, if they want to go online and study his research, back in the 40s and 50s, he went all over Europe and the United States and taught dentists the effect of metal in the teeth and promoted what he had learned when he went to China. This is where he learned the knowledge of how the meridians and he was dying himself. And he went to China and said, I want to live. They pulled his teeth. He got better, translated the work into German, and then it was later translated into English.
But you need to pull the teeth that don't have metal in? Do you have to pull those teeth also?
This is, again, personal choice. You don't have to.
No,
anything.
I'm just curious why you would pull
but
teeth.
The thing about... Teeth. Yeah, I understand. So I'll answer that question.
Yeah,
good. Teeth that have never had a filling. The molecular mercury will get into the microtubules, and you can take a tooth that has never had been drilled on, and it'll be plumb full of nickel, mercury, silver at the molecular level, which is still, if you do a spectrum analysis in a lab, that tooth will still be full, even though it's never been drilled on, because of the chewing, the effect of chewing over the years. It still gets in and jams the meridians in the entire mouth, even if they've never been drilled on. It's one of the biggest reasons people cannot remember what I'm talking about. And so before I even was led into this, I had my parents get over liver cancer, which then motivated me to, at 32 years old, get my teeth pulled. I mean, I was set up for this journey from the get-go.
Cerebral
palsy, and
so you had your
teeth.
I just want to get the teeth stuff. So you said when your parents had their teeth pulled, they both got over this terminal illness right away.
Yeah, and the man that told me about it, his name was Ben Awana, and his wife's name was Rita Holdridge, who he saved her life with terminal cancer and AIDS by having her teeth extracted. So she joined with him because he saved her life. But they called me when I was practicing as a chiropractor in Tempe, Arizona, it was back in 1988, and invited me to their home, and basically he told me the story of his history over a 30-year period. He worked with 1,100 terminally ill people. He'd clean them out with homeopathics, have their teeth completely extracted, and the cancers would leave, and they would live another 20 years, changing hardly any of their lifestyles except 1,100 people, only two did die. And they were both medical doctors and brothers. And they were just already chemo, radiated, cut on. There just wasn't enough spark left for the body to get going. He almost saved them, but he couldn't quite get them fired back up because there's too much damage. But this it's like, I've carried this ball for a long time as far as, and I understand recently the ADA has come up and fessed up that metal in the teeth is damaging and that they're willing to accept.
Well, everyone knows that, but you're saying that it's residue in the other teeth.
Yes. Now, I'm not saying that we can't come up with technologies to flushed out the microtubules with homeopathic. And I know there are people who claim that there are such technologies. But when you're terminally ill and you don't have much energy and you fully extract the teeth, that light that's in everybody's heart comes back on instantly, and the body can then kick in the immune system and regenerate and get going again. Now, when a person's still young and has some energy left, they can piddle around and have the metal removed and plastics replaced. But, you know, we've been screwed by the dental profession.
Okay, so we have the dental thing, and then we have the urine fetal thing. Let's go back to the uterus, the releasing
yes,
the membrane.
Yes, I didn't want to get too sidetracked with the teeth, but
no,
I just
but I
to
think
say
it's
that
fascinating. I don't know
that's
if I agree
the
with
stage.
It. I can't say I would agree with everything you're saying, although, you know, if it's your experience, that's your experience. But I would think it's a little severe to pull
I'm not saying that everybody wants to try this should have a teeth pulled before they try it, but that's the
right.
way I was set up. And I also feel, because this is basically, I didn't have teeth in the womb either. I didn't have metal in the teeth either. So what I'm saying is the meridians flowed freely in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you start to go back into these memories, what happens? Let's say, for example, the mom and dad have sex twice a week for the full 9 months. That's
I think there must be a time that's just people understand that. Anyway.
However many times they do, each time that the uterus contracts, there's this record of stagnation where the CO2 builds up and the metabolic waste builds up and the oxygen supply gets used up. Now, there's a very common practice called autoerotic asphyxiation, where people will actually cut off the blood supply with a noose and while they're masturbating. And I feel that these people in the sadomasochistic arena are actually very honestly tapping into these same memories I've been tapping into, but, of course, they're coming at it from a different perspective. But they're still tapping into the same. If what I'm saying is true, there must be some ways that people are trying to express these feelings in our society. And this is one of the most obvious things, you know, as a nose on your face, mirrors of what I'm saying happens during the contraction of the uterus during orgasm. It's what happens in the autoerotic asphyxiation or birth control play, they call it. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
No, I'm not familiar. Could you just go into that a little bit more? Because I just don't know. Can you explain the
okay.
oral?
Let's see. Yeah, the whole idea is you can do it solo. Most people do it solo, and it's usually very intellectual people, very, you know, people that are well-to-do that get into this, and usually the first time family is aware that they're engaged in this autoerotic asphyxiation is when they are found dead from strangulation. There is 250 to 1,000 people that die in the United States every year due to autoerotic asphyxiation.
Oh, so it becomes a kind of kinky sort of thing.
Well, it's like the first time they do it, they get away with it, and they have like a euphoric. It's more the orgasm is more euphoric when there's an oxygen deprivation, which would mirror what I'm saying happens in the womb.
Okay.
So they found a way to tap into the same memories.
I see. Okay, I get it. So the way to heal this, though, is by bringing this urine into the nose, because it's our earliest training, and then tell about the process of your healing this. How did it actually, you know, what did it change for you in your whole life? What was different after you felt you released the trauma from your fetal?
Well, the principles that I apply are ones that I learned from body electronics. And for your listeners, I'm going to give the website to where they can learn the laws of love, light, and perfection. It's called howweheal.com. My friend Doug Morrison is an author, and you can buy the book, How We Heal, and learn about how to apply the laws of love when it comes to pain. Because love is the highest
force. Can you just review some of those? Just because, you know, you've been leading up to this, but please just give us a little sample.
A little sample of what it's done for me personally.
Of what's on that website, just so...
Of the How We Heal?
Yeah.
Well, it talks about the law of, the law of love is basically, when I'm feeling pain in my body, I hold my body perfectly still, and I bring in love, and I embrace the pain, I make it my friend, and it melts, and it's gone. Everyone has this power within themselves, but we're taught to resist pain in our society from the time we're little. But if you know a young child, when they hurt themselves, they'll brush themselves off and go play. But if the mom goes over and gives them attention for when they hurt themselves, then they learn that they get attention for being in pain.
Go ahead. So that's pretty basic, though. I mean, I guess it is pretty basic, the laws of health and healing, right?
The laws of light are very interesting too. They're talked about on the website, and the violet consuming flame, which is something that those who are aware of the use of the violet light for healing, is something that when I go down under, and I call snorkeling, I call it going down under, like going to Australia. When I go down under, I will apply the principles now of love, light, and perfection. Now let's go back to the pulsing. Now the pulsing that I experienced at my navel when I breathed water out my nose reminded me of the pulsing I would feel underneath my fingertips when I would hold points on people during body electronics point holding seminars. Now there's a universal pulse, an energy pulse that flows through all creation. And when we hold points on people, it's like the points will heat up, cool down, and pulse, and the pulse is continuing to consider the healing phase. So when I experience that, the pulsing of the navel, I recognize that is the same pulse I experienced many, many times on the table, having my points held or holding other people's points. And so There was other experiences that I drew on as I started to tap into the in-utero memories.
So when you tapped into that and you realized what was happening, that probably you suffered from blood supply loss because of orgasmic contractions by your mother, you started to heal this pleasure pain archetype or pleasure pain, yes.
Yeah.
Like psychosis, in a sense, that was running your life. Right? Yeah, you healed
it's
it.
Running, it's running. Most people have forgotten conception to age 3 or 4.
Uh-huh.
So what I'm saying is, here's a way for you to actually tap back into what psychiatrists say runs our program, our subconscious tapes run our program. So here's a way for you to tap into remember. And just to give you one example, probably the most powerful one for me personally is 2 years ago, I remembered being a twin. Now, there's a very common thing called vanishing twin syndrome. 1 in 8 pregnancies begins as 2.
And 1 in 8, you're saying? 1 in 8?
1 in 8. And it's a very common psychological thing that people have running around in their program. So what I experienced at 3 months along was my parents had been separated since conception because my dad was working, traveling to work. When they got back together, first thing they do is have sex. And so I wasn't used to it. I hadn't had 3 months of, training. All of a sudden, boom, me and my sister are both bombarded with an orgasm after
You did have a sister twin in the womb with you?
this is what I have remembered. My mother
right.
confirmed with me that at 3 months along, she bled for 3 days and thought she would lose me. She didn't realize
uh-huh.
that she had lost my sister. So as I've been doing this in-uterine memory work, I have actually tapped back into that feeling of loss of my, what I call him, my buddy. And
uh-huh.
And that script of pushing away the one I loved the most, or feeling like I hurt her, that I was the one that did it.
Yeah, but the fetus doesn't even have emotions like love, does it?
Oh, it does, too. It feels everything, the mom and dad experience.
But it feels it in a visceral, sensorial way. I don't know if it has emotions that you can identify as love. I mean, how would it know what love is? I mean...
Well, if you look at it from the point of view of past lives, we've all been male and females in past lives. We've,
mm-hmm.
we've done this hundreds of times in an attempt to try to figure out how to master our bodies and perfect ourselves. So to say that the soul of the fetus isn't aware and feeling everything, of course, the developmental on the physical level
uh-huh.
is not as attuned as that of the soul level. But still, what I'm talking about is when you go into a nursing home, the dominance of the fetal memories is obvious because everybody curls back in the fetal before they die. So what I'm saying, this is a way to access those fetal memories that are eventually going to curl you back up in the ball. So longevity, anti-aging, or if you want to look at the big picture of ending the rule of death on this planet, you know, I've been into physical immortality for... Since 1989.
Yeah, no, I've
Chuck
been
Fernie
to
and Jim out in,
yeah.
in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Yeah, no, I know Chuck Fernie and Jim. Yeah, and Leonard Orr. I know all those immortalists, and I believe in physical immortality. So you're saying this is a really key element in achieving physical immortality.
Well, I don't know. All I know is I've been almost separated out from the common mainstream after I started tapping into these memories because people would rather die than remember what I've been remembering. I mean,
Why is it so bad? What's wrong with what you've been remembering? I mean, it's not a bad thing. It's actually
a real blessing. But what I'm saying is most people, I'm not going to judge people where they're at.
No, it's okay. You can judge people.
It's like... what I've experienced from my family, friends, and peers is I've tried to share what I've learned. It's
mm-hmm.
just been a it's just like oh, that's just weird stuff. You know, don't listen.
Well,
to that.
That's why I call my program New Realities, because it explores these possibilities, these important discoveries people are making that are so far ahead of mass consciousness, social consciousness.
I really appreciate this opportunity to speak because I feel like a genie that's been corked up in a bottle, and you took the cork out tonight. So.
Well, thank you. But so let's just go a little bit, because we have about 7 or 8 more minutes. But when you finally released or you got in touch with these trauma, how did your life change? What happened?
Well, it's happening as we speak. I mean, I'm living it right now by having just I was beginning to tell you that I am so off of the scales, like I don't even get junk mail anymore, you know.
That's funny. That's a good joke. I like that.
But I feel like my communication is you know up to my father in heaven or to God or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
So I listen and follow as I feel directed. And I feel like, as a chiropractor, when I left practice in 91, I made a covenant with my Heavenly Father. It says, I don't care what the cost is, I want to heal. I want to know the truth of how to heal my daughter, Jennifer, number one. But then, what the truth is around healing. And so, you know, it's been step by step I've been led. And each phase that I've gone through in this since 1989, I think, when I made that covenant, has just, you know, built on each one. And I stand on the heads of of giants, as far as some of the people I've mentioned on this program that I've learned from. And there's other people I could talk about that I haven't mentioned. They're just, as I made this commitment to physical mortality, to know the truth as far as how to make it real and physical, this is where I've gone. The thing I would suggest to the listeners and to you, Alan, is just to try what I've
Jeff, I'm going to try it. I am going to try it, and I'm going to see what happens. But I just want to know, how has is your life different? How have you been transformed because of this?
It just happens so gradually. I don't feel like it's but it's like every time I go down under for 18 years, it's like the next day people would be acting out. They could feel the energies I'd felt the night before, and I feel like they'd be saying the same word patterns I'd touched into, or they'd be playing out some kind of it's like my life became a movie. So I didn't need to go to the movie. I didn't need to watch TV. My life was a movie. Life is a stage, they say. But, I mean,
so you started to have an awakening experience. You're no longer run by this pleasure pain principle, and you're more awake. You're saying is what I hear.
Much more in tune. I feel with, like, just to give you an example of. There's many people in this country that are hurting, that are poor, that are the financial crisis. And I could compare the inhuman memory that I've tapped into to the financial crisis because the blood supply was cut off. I hear people on CNN saying the Japanese market had a severe contraction, the most severe contraction they've had in 30 years. And it says, well, here they are talking the same language. So what I'm saying is this memory that's in all of us where the blood supply was cut off, that was our money, that was our income. And our expenses would be the metabolic waste. We couldn't get rid of our metabolic waste, and so the entire financial industry is based on the cellular memories of the womb. And so what is happening in this financial awakening is there's a better way where there's no rich and there's no poor, and the answer lies in the mind of the fetus.
Wow, that is radical. That is great. So you're saying if people. If mothers didn't have orgasms during pregnancy, and for the people who had that happen, if they would just do this fetal retrieval, then and clear that trauma, we wouldn't live in the same kind of greedy pleasure pain society that we live in right now.
Right. It's the feeling of lack we had in the womb. No matter how hard we sucked, and no matter how hard we pushed, we couldn't get enough. This generates the poor society. And there's those people who have the resistance to not being able to get enough. And so they're the ones that become the dominant, and they're the rich. And the rich get richer, and the poor get poor. But it's all based on our resistance to the subconscious memories that happen during orgasm. It's such a profound, all-encompassing memory that we all have recorded inside of us. And if we would broadcast this globally, and like every country start to do this, we would see a shift on this planet which would just bring what we've all dreamed about. But we can't do it by bypassing the pain-pleasure complex. The pharmaceuticals are shooting up the wrong tree thinking they can come up with drugs that can suppress these symptoms.
Well, this is amazing. I mean, I am going to try this. I'm going to put this on my website, newrealities.com. I'm going to let people respond and hear their opinions and also try this therapy. I mean, people have nothing to lose. It's probably pretty relaxing to stay underwater for.
I call it my happy place. I mean, I sleep so well after I go there. It's like,
how long do you spend underwater?
Oh,
generally
5-10 minutes. It'd be the most. There's other things I've learned to do as I've progressed, and that's how I tapped into the connection between the nasal pain and the sexual energy, because embryologically, and everybody knows this, whenever they kiss, they get turned on downstairs. So there's embryologically, when we unfolded, everything in the upper half of the body was connected to the lower half of the body.
Go ahead. No, I just want to absorb that part.
This is such a huge topic, but, you know, as far as mirror, anatomical mirror images in the body, the cord and placenta represent our other half. Now, there's three one-sided organs, the heart, spleen, and liver, and the other half of those organs are manifested in the placenta. So when you date somebody and you mirror up your other half, this is the way it was created, your other half of your liver, the other half of your spleen, the other half of your heart, that's why you feel like there's no time when you're with someone that you're really in sync with.
Wait, so the other person fulfills the other half of you, you're saying?
Yeah, that's the way our Creator created our bodies.
See,
that's why people are drawn to each other and willing to go through the pain pleasure of a relationship, because they want to remember.
Because
they want to remember
the physiological resonance that we are constantly looking for. You're saying that's
if you look at if you look at the arena of tantric sex, that's what they're tapping into.
That is a fascinating discovery. That actually makes sense. That's we're looking for the resonance of these organs that need the completion.
Exactly.
So, but you're saying within the body, it's like the head and the genitals are the corresponding, and the arms and the legs, of course, are the corresponding.
But now, when you look at the thing that's fascinating, that and I'm a practitioner of applied kinesiology, which is a chiropractic technique, and I learned how to ask my innate intelligence questions about the mirror images. Now, from the knees down, elbows down, it's pretty easy to see that they came from the same embryological tissue. But when you get to the femur and compare it to the shoulder girdle, there's only one bone in the thigh, but there's three in the shoulder girdle. So what happened is when we were all curled up in that little 18-day-old morula, the styloid bone that comes out of the base of the neck is the mirror image of the femur, and the three bones of the inner ear are the mirror image embryologically of the three bones of the shoulder girdle.
Wow.
And so you can understanding these correlations helped me with pain management as a chiropractor.
Wow, Jeff, I think we're almost out of time. I mean, this is fascinating. We should maybe do another show sometime.
I would love to, because I have so much more. I mean, 15 years is a lot of time to stay.
Why don't you just tell people where you're going to be speaking in New York?
Okay. Fordham University, Columbus Avenue at 60th Street, down by Central Park. I'll be speaking there on June 11th at 10 o'clock. If anybody would like to come over and listen, they're welcome to. The cost to come in, I can give you the cost for the convention. The people putting on this convention is called the Psychohistory Association. The people who direct this are Lloyd DeMaus and Alan Moll. It costs $150 for the full 3 days if you're a member, or $180 if you're a non-member. Or if just for 1 day, it's $80 a day. Or for non-members, it's $110 to come in and
do. All right. And your website again, your blog is what?
My blog is www.myotherhalf.blog.com.
Well, thank you, Jeff, for being a guest on New Reality. And
it was my pleasure. I'm indebted to you.
Let's just see what kind of response that we get. Because I'm going to put this on my website, New Realities. It's also archived on the BBSradio.com website under New Realities. So I'll let you know, and good luck. Maybe I will see you in New York sometime.
Yeah, well, when we get there on the 9th, my wife Claire and I are coming, and we'll be there from the 9th through the 13th.
Okay, we'll talk. Thanks, Jeff, for being a guest on New Realities.
You
this is Alan Steinfeld. Thank you. And my email is newrealities@earthlink.net. My website is newrealities.com. Thank you for listening. This is Chris Williamson and the Song of His Soul.